Welcome today. This is Mike from ProThink.org. Today is June 9th, Monday, 2008. We have two wonderful guests on today. We're going to talk about a couple of topics that have to do with babies and a lot of the rituals and medical practices that are started in an infant's early years, and a lot of the damage that's being done to them right off the bat, and kind of gets into the different things. So what I can do is bring on the show. We have Mary, who is a midwife from the UK, and we also have Leon, who is an intactivist and a yoga instructor out of California today. I'd like to welcome you on, Leon.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mary, how are you?
Hello, yes. Hello.
Okay, well, first we're going to start off. Each one of you specialize in two very important topics when it comes to infants. I'll have you give, Leon, I'll have you give a quick summary, and then we'll have Mary give a summary, and we'll kind of get in from there and see how we'll see where we leave with this. Kind of your specialty in circumcision, or a.k.a. mutilation. If you could go ahead and break that down a little bit for us.
Sure. Mike, my name is, hello everybody, I'm a long time intact, which means I have not been circumcised. I'm an intactivist. That's what they call people who are against people brutalizing, cruelly, a helpless infant tied to plastic. It's called a circumstraint, and the most erogenous part of its body brutally removed, which is the foreskin, and it absolutely cuts off the frenulum, which is the most sensitive part of the male's body.
And Mary, you deal with a lot of stuff that has to, we were talking briefly about this for a while, you deal with the umbilical cord aspect of childbirth, correct, and how this is damaging. Could you break that down?
Yes. The medical profession, the education of the medical profession, if you go right up to who chooses what goes into the medical textbooks, what is chosen, that's taught in the colleges, is controlled by, well, in midwifery, by the Jewesses. And this has been very long-standing, although obviously it's a covert thing. People don't know about it. And what has happened is that the fulfillment of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, the bit where it talks about dumbing down the goyim, one of the things that can be done that severely spoils the health of a newborn baby is to interfere with the cord physiology. And this is what is going on. What is happening is midwives and obstetricians who are taught in the medical school, they're not taught the physiology of the cord. What happens is they are clamping into this organ and in many cases amputating it with the use of the cord clamp. I want to explain the cord physiology step by step so people really understand that this organ in the human being has a role after the baby is born. It's step one, extra blood, and step two, the stem cells. The stem cells are released into the human umbilical cord. They come straight out of the water jelly in the cord, and they get diluted in the vein. Those stem cells are destined to be inside the baby's body, and they are incorporated inside the baby's body by an observable physiological event, which is called the pulsations of the cord. And that part of the physiology is missing from Western medical education. And when the cord is clamped, all the venous valves open up at one go, and the majority of midwives and obstetricians even know that this physiology exists because it was willfully removed from textbooks in about the 1950s. And because of that, now it's been clamped into, and the hospitals are safe. They can then retrieve the blood and the stem cells that is trapped behind the cord clamp and use that to make health and beauty products for other people. And that this is the future of medicine, that babies stem cell, cord blood stem cells, that they are tricking us into thinking that they're a waste product of birth or a byproduct of birth, and that it does no harm to the newborn baby for the cord to be clamped too soon. And it does a tremendous amount of harm depending on how much stem cells are occluded by the cord clamp, and also how much blood volume the baby is depleting. That's what I want to bring to the attention of the American people, because this is going to a government level. Will I continue?
Yeah. Well,
hello.
Let's give a recap here. So, okay, so we got circumcision, and then we got the umbilical cord cut. Both equally as damaging to an infant when they're born. Now, let's put this in a bigger scope here. These people, quite honestly, both of these things are instigated and through the medical field, through this kosher mafia here, the same mafia that's responsible for killing hundreds of millions of people through the world wars, committing usury on nations and submitting governments, whether through communism, socialism. These same people, what they do to infants, they got to get you right from the start, once they get you past this stuff. Now, Leon, could you break down exactly how circumcision started, what it does and when it affects a baby psychologically and physically?
I would preface it first by trying to explain what happens at any baby's birth, male or female, while the baby is in vitro. A famous doctor who changed all of that, Dr. Frederick Le Boyer, wanted to know why babies were crying when they were delivered in a normal hospital setting, in the hospital delivery room. And he had delivered over 10,000 babies in France. And he said that, I better check and see what happened. He went and did primal therapy for himself. And, where people, you just scream out loud, and found out that baby has a great time for the 8 3/4 or 8, almost 9 months that it's in a mother's womb. And then all of a sudden, when it has to be pushed out, the cervix gets tight and the baby's head has to come out, and then the baby says, oh, well, you're murdering me. And that baby then comes out to bright lights, scalpel, suture, gauze, loud noises, babies pulled out, tapped on the back, turned upside down, put on a cold metal weighing machine, and that baby then has to, doesn't smile and that sort of stuff. So his methods were different. He had the baby come out very quietly in a quiet setting, dim lights, gently massage the baby, put on the mother's chest and gently massaged, and the umbilical cord was still attached for quite a while, actually, even 5 minutes, Mary. And then that umbilical cord would lose its own use, and automatically they'll just loosen it off, and that baby then becomes a Le Boyer, and then that they put on in a little warm water, and the baby can smile. The baby smiles right away. So they did follow up the psychologist, and this was an amazing discovery that 9 years later, a psychologist did a study on these Le Boyer delivered babies, now age 9, and found out that all 104 babies that were now 9 year old, all of them were ambidextrous. In other words, the neuronal pathways to the brain develop so relaxed when the baby is born in a natural, relaxed setting, and that those babies, Le Boyer's book is called Birth Without Violence, and I would suggest everybody in the world to read it. Now, if you add the trauma of circumcision to that little baby, then you've got a bombshell, you've got a dynamite, you've got a grenade to really screw up this little baby's Gaelic and lifestyle. I mean, that baby is then violated profusely. And the trauma that is created for this baby already born with, the hospital setting and what Le Boyer discovered, you add to that the trauma of circumcision, mostly male genital. Of course, there's also female genital mutilation. And I went to 2 international symposiums years ago at the San Francisco Miyako Hotel in Anaheim, and have been long time researching this this horror, this brutality of male genital mutilation. What Bobby Fischer said when he was speaking out, he says the Jews, they mutilate their children. That's what he was referring to. So basically, you've got a little baby that doesn't trust another human being. And how can that baby trust another human being where, you know, these huge people and chopped off his most erogenous, sensitive parts of his body?
Can you briefly get into who started this practice, why, in the... You know, most people think it's for a hygiene thing, but, I mean, really, it's
It has nothing to do with hygiene. It's 83% of the men on this planet are not circumcised, and it's interesting that even somebody on YouTube brought that up, and I was quite surprised, which was nice, that to hear somebody else saying it, that the people that are fighting the most in the Middle East right now, the Jews... the so-called Jews, and I call them so-called Jews because that's what Benjamin Friedman called them, because they're really the Ashkenazim Khazars who were converted to Judaism in 740 A.D. And they were, they're the ones that started it, and they tried to blame it on the ancient Phoenicians and the Mesopotamians, and say that, oh, it's in the carvings. And those carvings have sometimes been discredited because there are people who copycat those carvings. So the who knows where that started, but generally I think the three cultures, the Muslims, the Jews, and the Jew-influenced American Christian Goyim are the ones that are killing each other the most in the Middle East.
Okay, so we got this brutalization of the cause circumcision here, which has pretty much no merit at all.
It's called male genital mutilation. It's not called circumcision anymore. Because it's actually a mutilation. And there was a woman and a husband and a wife who I have great respect for. Their sex life had become so bad, Kristen and Paul, that the husband heard of a thing called foreskin restoration, and he had his foreskin restored to a certain degree. You know, of course, all circumcisions cut the frenulum, which is the lower part of the glans penis, which is right at the hood is. And, of course, all fissions excise that, so that's lost. But he regained some sensitivity. And there she wanted to know how many other women went through what she went through. They were almost going to get a divorce, but they stayed together. So she did an extensive questionnaire, and she passed it out, and she promulgated it to many different people, many different women, and asked them, how does it feel to be with a circumcised man versus with an uncircumcised man? And to the T, almost all the women said, oh, it was horrible, it was dry sex, it was brutal, it was like having a jackhammer put in there. And their wonderful website, and Gray, who has SeekingTruthNews.com, he has a link to their website, and I think it's very brave of him, to do that. It's called sexasnatureintendedit.com, sexasnatureintendedit.com, and their book is called that. And it's the website's very graphic, but it tells you exactly how that foreskin sliding up and down is needed, how when women and men have sex, that lubrication is natural, that when that foreskin's taken off, there's no lubrication, and 12 to 20 layers of scar tissue develop around the glands, and that creates dryness. It's like sticking your tongue out each time and leaving it out. That tongue is going to dry. Same thing happened with the penis. It's not an outside organ. It's an inside organ. It needs to protect the skin. So there's lots to it, Mike. But that book is a really excellent book, and the website's excellent to go to. Sex as Nature Intended It. I highly recommend that. And I've read a lot of books on circumcision. I have a lot of books. I've gone to conferences, and they don't talk about it because a lot of the Jews actually control even the no-circ movement. So it's hard to, and, you know, even though they mean good, but I don't see that much change. And I know that in the Midwest, they're circumcision rate's quite high.
Well, yeah, you bring up a good point, because anything you look into, whether it be, you know, we've made this point clear plenty of times, not specifically geared in the male genital mutilation movement, but in all movements, whether it be anti-war, 9/11 truth movement, you'll always find a lot of the top of these organizations or groups, it's them trying to control the investigation or the information going through. Now, Mary, could you tell us the damage that from the umbilical cord being cut?
The umbilical cord should be left to pulsate until the baby's incorporated the stem cells. And it takes a lot longer than 5 minutes. And this is one of the lies that has been perpetuated. The gatekeeper of that lie is an assessment that is done called the APGAR score. What does the APGAR score mean? A perfect 10 is music to proud parents' ears. I'm reading this out of a book that's available here called Pregnancy Questions and Answers. The thing is, the APGAR score is not an assessment of a perfect birth. It's actually only assessment of primary life support system, which is the breathing and the heart. That's what is set up by the baby at the first instance of life, and it is after that that the baby then collects up the secondary life support systems, and the pulsations of the cord can take up to 15 minutes to 20 minutes, and the midwife will see the pulsations work their way down the cord all the way from the maternal end of the cord all the way back to the baby. The cord is about 20 inches long. You can see these pulsations progress down the cord, and when they've incorporated, because what happens is the arterial pressure is built up at the far end of the cord. It's like blowing up a sausage balloon. If you those balloons that the children's entertainers make the balloon animals out of, they're very, very long. If you blow up those balloons, you have a part of the balloon is blown up at the very far end of the balloon, and as you blow more, it can't, you know, the balloon won't explode. What happens is the pressure comes back, and gradually the balloon is filled up with air. Well, the same principle is in the umbilical cord. Arterial pressure shunts out the contents of the vein. That's where the stem cells are. But this takes longer than 5 minutes. It takes 15 minutes or more, and then the blood in the system will coagulate. Hello?
Yeah, very interesting.
If the midwife looks at the cut end of the cord when the full pulsations have happened, she will see what I call the cut end of cord evidence, which is two arteries full of coagulated blood, and there is nothing in the vein. There is no stem cell harvest. It's because we are using these cord clamps, and people believe, because, 5 minutes is what is currently stated in the hospital because of the APGAR score, because they assess it at 5 minutes, and everybody thinks the child is done and dusted then. But really, if we're going to have proper physiological birth and the cord is not molested with a cord clamp, the whole procedure takes longer than that. It takes about 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And the other point about the Lahoye birth is that they introduce, what he said is absolutely true. If the babies are delivered by the full Lahoye method, which is to let the babies breathe first. The baby must come down below the level of the placenta in the first few seconds of life in order to take on the extra blood. And once the baby has set up the first life support system, the baby will breathe, the mother can pick the baby up. But the baby should not be picked up in the first few seconds of life. They need to take on the extra blood from their umbilical cord and set up the cardiovascular system and then lift the baby up onto the mother. The baby should not be, as an immediate part of the birthing process, slapped up onto the mother's body, because in that way the baby is not being able to take on the blood in the way which was intended, which is as a gravity feed mechanism. So that the first bit should, the baby should be down below the level of the placenta of the first 20 seconds or so. Once the baby has cried, that means that the baby has inflated the lungs, taken on the blood volume that the baby needs, and then the baby can be picked up. And then it's then that the baby will keep pumping blood up its own arteries, and the arterial pressure will return by shunting the contents of the vein, which has been diluted by 1,000 million stem cells, back into the body of the baby.
In your opinion, and I know this is an opinion base, why do you think, and Leon, I got the same question for you for this mutilation too, but in your opinion, sure, why do you think, Mary, that these people are doing this as a medical practice? Where do you think this originated from, and why do they keep pushing this as a practice?
Well, from the point of view of the cord blood stem cell harvest, I mean, what could be more valuable than the future health potential of a baby? They are stealing, basically, hematopoietic stem cells, pluripotent stem cells, and the T-cell progenitors. This is the baby's future health potential. Now, what they're saying is, of course, there are therapeutic uses for these. That's true. And the therapeutic uses, in my opinion, you know, we shouldn't be getting stem cells. And the, you know, we have a duty of health to make sure that the babies are delivered properly. We shouldn't be using babies during the birthing process as a commodity at state, so that their blood is more important for somebody else's healthcare requirements than the baby. We shouldn't be used as a source product for stem cells, because each stem cell is DNA specific to the baby, and those the cells can only grow tissue of that baby from a forensic point of view. And if they're used in therapy, the person that takes on the stem cells of the baby from the cord is actually taking on part of the baby's body tissue. This violates the newborn baby's bodily integrity, because integrity means the whole body together. So if some of those stem cells are growing on somewhere else, in a laboratory rat or in a laboratory test tube or in somebody else's body, this is violating the baby's actual DNA identity. It's a nice part of the, you know, one group of people are more important than the other. That if human beings are all sharing body parts, then we don't have individual identity. So it brings us down to sort of one great big amorphous kind of herd. I think that's another part of the scam that's going on here, is to muddy the lines of human identity is one of the things.
And Leon, what's your take and your opinion on this genital mutilation thing that goes on? What do you think the reason is behind that?
Well, the reason is very simple. It's a control mechanism. They can control. They make little sexual mutants, sexual cripples out of people, men. And I have a strong feeling that the women, and especially in the Jewish custom with their Brit Milah, they stand around and they make a big deal about it. They sing, they celebrate the Brit Milah, and you know, they don't look at them. They put a little wine on the little baby's mouth, so as if to anesthetize the baby's pain, and you know, that custom. I think, you know, it sounds almost like I'm trying to blame women, but I'm not, because they're just unaware of the importance of foreskin, the importance of a natural penis. And I think the Jewish women especially, you know, and if you look at feminists, Andrea Dworkin, Gloria Steinem, Eleanor Shmuel, Betty Friedan, these are all so-called Jewish women who are the radical feminists. And they all, most of them turn to lesbianism, because I think they've got sick and tired of having sex with dried out male, their male Jewish penises, that they were the ones that first allowed them to stand around and allow those men to violate those little helpless infant Jewish babies, eight-day-old babies. They do it on the eighth day, by the way. That poor little baby, for 8 days, it had complete placid life. Well, you know, placid, hopefully non-hospital setting delivered, because as it is, as Le Boyer proved, that those babies, all babies, boy and girl, would have a real hard time getting anger all the time when they were born in a very hurried way, so that because every birth, every OBGYN knows in a medical setting that they make a lot of money if the baby is delivered quickly and pushed out and cut the umbilical cord past. That's another reason, Mary, that umbilical cords are cut so quickly, because they make so much money off deliveries. So, but
they make money selling they make money on selling on those body parts. They make money on selling on the stem cells, and once the clump goes on the cord, the tissue is defined as residual to clinical procedure, and it becomes hospital property. So the hospital is should really dispose of that stuff by incineration if it's not, you know, for any other reason.
And what they do is they sell the foreskin to cosmetic companies for use of cosmetic. I believe it's $35 or $45 per foreskin. So it's horrible. I mean, this is absolutely brutal. It's disgusting. And as Gandhi said, Mahatma Gandhi, he said, if we want real peace, we have to begin with the children. And that famous Dr. Carl Menninger, he said, what we do to our children, they will do to society. And you can see that being played out in the Middle East.
So, yeah, I'm looking at if you think about it, the first 2 years, even while the baby's in the womb, common Western medical practices, which are orchestrated, engineered, and controlled by these people that it seems like from cradle to grave, they want to poison us, make us sick, slavery us. So in the first 2 years of a child's life, you have a child who's... penis has been lopped off, mutilated. The cord has been denied any kind of efficiency. Then on top of it, you can get into the vaccinations where they want to poison you with vaccinations. You know, the birth itself, I think that isn't we haven't even touched on upon yet how the birth itself in a hospital setting is a very, very violent setting to have a baby. They absolutely frown against doing any type of birthing position except for laying on the back, which Mary, you probably know better than I do, obviously, at this, but isn't birthing on the back one of the worst ways to have a baby?
Well, it's perfectly a good way if there's a cesarean section or if there's a reason to pull the baby out with forceps, but from the point of view of the physiology, the upright position is how the womb is actually designed to work. The womb works most efficiently if the mother is in some sort of upright position, even kneeling, all fours, squatting, and that's particularly true for the third stage of labor. Once the baby is born, if the mother is in a more upright position, the placenta shears off the womb wall with an issue of blood. And if that blood is allowed to fall towards gravity, the placenta will move into the lower portion of the womb and then it is birthed. But if the mother's flat on her back, what happens is the womb hangs back. That blood can pool in the womb itself, and it opens up the womb, which makes the womb bleed even more. So you can get huge postpartum hemorrhages because of the supine position. And that's why they brought in the drugs for controlling that hemorrhage. Instead of correcting the position, which is to have the women in the upright positions, they use the drugs to actually control the hemorrhage and not... back so that's another silly thing that has gone on. We're led to believe that medical science and when we think of science, we think of physiology is the controlling aspect of childbirth, but no, we have this cultural imposed method of birth which has got nothing to do with physiology at all.
In yoga, we've got a position that when I teach my prenatal yoga classes, we have women do the squatting position. It's called Malasana. And what that does is it relieves, even when we go to the bathroom, Mary, you might know that the porcelain throne was discovered by, I think was started by Queen Victoria, and hers was made of gold. So what happens when you sit on a porcelain throne is that it locks up, it chokes the puborectalis muscle, which then, all this stuff, excuse my French, the ship goes back up into the colon, and it sticks there, and it causes 17 different diseases constipation, hemorrhoids, and colon cancer, all of it, all due to sitting on the porcelain throne. So ideally, we should sit the old way of sitting down, squatting down, and that is also the natural way to birth. By the way, yes. Mike, also, Eustace Mullins' book, excellent book, Murder by Injection, The Medical Conspiracy Against America, should be required reading for everybody about the history of these, the American Medical Association, that originally there were two journalists that didn't make it as journalists, and they collected all the allopathic doctors and joined them together in a union, and they called that the American Medical Association in Chicago in 1823. So also a physician who takes the oath, he takes a primary oath. The first oath in medicine is first, do no harm. And every doctor that violates a male is breaking that oath and should be arrested. That's how strongly people should feel about male genital mutilation.
Well, yeah, and that goes with these same people that put fluoride in our water, you know, poison the foods, the crops. I mean, they just, like I said, from cradle to grave, even before the cradle, you know, it's, they frown against any kind of holistic natural medicines during a pregnancy. They would, you know, they'll pretend, oh, we're not going to put you on these drugs, but you can still take these drugs. And, you know, of course, they're not trained, and they're forced to profit from selling as many pills as they possibly can.
Got it.
So.
Got it, Mike. And I think that you're doing a good service to humanity by letting these views be aired out, because people need to know that we want peace on this planet. We really want peace. We don't want a little baby that's violated at birth. At the first coming onto this planet and finding out how brutal people are. I mean, imagine yourself, a little baby, helpless, and all these huge people hovering over you and holding you down and violating you like that. That is absolutely horrible. And a lot of men that have been circumcised, they cannot even express their feelings because their feelings have been so traumatized. They've become, they become like poor people. And it's so sad. And when I go to Intactivist meetings, a lot of the guys, they ask me, you know, mostly homosexuals, because even heterosexuals are in denial about what happened to them. And it's so sad because America, most men are circumcised, and because of a Jewish custom, and because of the doctors are mostly Jewish, and they've been influenced by Peter Dan, and they blame it on their covenant, their you know, Moses supposedly circumcised himself, and that's a bunch of baloney. I mean, no religion has the right to violate another human being. It's just a human rights issue.
Exactly.
As much as it's a medical issue. So, first do no harm. That's their thing. The people, they have no right to cut another baby like that, and that's the most sensitive part on their bodies.
Well, I think you illustrated that well too. I mean, could you imagine yourself? I mean, even being a full-grown adult, being strapped down, and having one of your most sensitive organs lobbed off.
Right? Can you imagine an adult? I've known some people who had circumcision done when they were 14, and then you know, me being Armenian by ethnicity, know that my friend in Glendale, she did studies on the Armenians in America, found out that 40% of Armenians are circumcised. And for the Armenians that come from the Middle East, from Beirut, from Syria, from Lebanon, 75% of those have been circumcised. So you can see the Jewish influences, even in the Middle East, that they've actually made those little sexual mutants out of the even the Lebanese Armenians. And our culture doesn't do it, just like every culture in the world. It's Japanese, the Indians, the Mexicans, they don't circumcise. Now, 83% of the men on this planet do not circumcise. So there's more of us uncircumcised people than there are. But unfortunately, the people in Europe, they don't speak out about it because to them, circumcision is not an issue. No one's circumcised there, so they don't worry. But I'm in this culture, and I deal with, I'm all the time talking to circumcised men. And the violence, you know, TV violence, video games, the movies, you know. I mean, I would rather see sexuality openly done because I think that's more natural than the violence of brutality, which I believe stems all the way from birth, from infancy, from the male genital mutilation.
Just the baby boy's fetus, the gonads, the testes are in the baby boy's tummy. I think that those are there to receive the blessing of all these stem cells. I say there's 1,000 million stem cells in the umbilical cord that should end up in the baby. They're the future growth potential of the baby. There's three main types. The hemophoretic stem cells generate blood. The pluripotent stem cells generate skin and bone, muscle and nerve tissue. And the T cell progenitors generate the T cells, which is the immunity. If the baby is deplete in any of these cells, it means that the growth potential of that child is not as good as it should be. And one of the things I think is if the gonads don't get a great deal of these extra stem cells during the birthing process, I think that that is a route for why we're seeing such a big increase in male homosexuality. Because once the gonads get these extra stem cells, they then descend into the scrotal sac, and it's about the age of 4 or 5 days, I think. It's a few days after the baby is born. And I think that, to my mind, also called opportunities, eunuchs by other means. It was, you know, I think that this is one of the underlying reasons that we see an increase of male homosexuality at the moment, and why they're also... I think they're, you know, they've liberated to a certain extent, you know, homosexual lifestyle, but I think that that's by design because they're trying to hide the fact that this cord amputation is actually, you know, it's an ongoing plan, the cord amputation. And as I say, I'll just bring your attention to Orrin Hatch, Senator for Utah, who put a bill promotes use of cord blood stem cells in treating disease. That was in 2003. Behind that, the setting up of the cord blood stem cell banks. I mean, this is like a government policy to set this up, and this is being promoted through the medical schools as the future of health, using all this so-called genetic therapies and all the rest of it, when, in fact, the whole thing is based on a medical fraud, biological and scientific malpractice.
Mary, could you give us, I think you told me when we spoke off the air about lotusbirth.com. Could you give us some resources where people could go to find out more about cord amputation and cord, all of that sort of stuff?
Okay.
I for myself would like to know.
Right, there's World Wide Web Lotus Birth, and that's L-O-T-U-S, birth. And that is a site of Donna Young. She's a Canadian mother and midwife and grandmother, and she's got lots of information there about the abuse that I'm talking about. And she's also got a petition to send to Her Majesty the Queen, I believe, because this is going on throughout Canada, which has got connections with the British administration. So that's World Wide Web Lotus Birth. Lotus birth itself is the principle of actually delivering a baby and not actually using any surgery at all with respect to the cord, so that the cord will detach from the baby at 3 or 4 days of age along with the placenta. So you wrap up the placenta in a diaper or something and you leave that with the baby because, you know, another way of looking at the placenta is like the baby's... The baby sort of nurturer, like a sort of hidden twin to the baby, and that it's, you know, any
right.
Like unnatural severing.
Right, it's all
it's
been,
yeah.
Wow. And what else? Are there any more?
Well, I've got research? Another one. Placental
yeah.
respiration, and that is Eileen Nicole Simon, a child called Conrad, to autism, and he died very as a young child. She's done a lot of research into the history of cord clamping because she was working in Harvard Medical School, and she showed through an article called The History of Cord Clamping how in all the old textbooks it does say wait until the pulsations of the cord have ceased. That was the instruction in the textbooks up until about the 1950s, and it's gone missing. It is beginning to surface, but there's still no proper explanation as to what this physiology is. As I've explained, it is actually the baby incorporating the stem cells. Another resource is George Malcolm Morley, and Morley is M-O-R-L-E-Y, and he's got an article, How the Cord Clamp Injures Your Baby's Brain, and, you know, the huge increase in autism and the related attention deficit hyperactive disorder, another reason for this epidemic is this business of cord amputation in the hospital and cosmetically tidying an organ before it's actually finished its job.
Sounds very interesting. So both aspects are aspects of birth and the little baby coming onto this earth already angry and already frowning and already disloyal, trust broken, and then we wonder why there's so much, you know, killing on campuses, Virginia Tech and wherever else, and 9/11 and whatever. And by the way, as we know, 9/11 was done by a member of the Mossad, and it's very clear. So all the 9/11 untruth people, they should be listening to this, because this is birth violence.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. You know, it's, I mean, just look at everything that these people are into, you know, like I said, from childbirth all the way to death, you know, they just got a rap.
Can I relate this to 9/11?
Sure.
Christopher Sobolin, investigative journalist, pointed to the company ICTS. This is an Israeli-based company, International Consultants on Targeted Security. These were the people responsible for the security at Boston Logan Airport on 9/11. The tie with what I'm talking about is that ICTS run the cord blood stem cell bank at the Luton and Dunstable Hospital. That is the NHS, National Health Service Hospital in the UK, that had the first cord blood stem cell bank, or the public bank, which was set up in 2005. And to run a cord blood stem cell bank, you need a sophisticated database. Which is this Israeli-based company, they are running the cord blood stem cell bank at the Luton and Dunstable Hospital. At least they were in 2005. And the link with them is that they are also the people provided with the media in this country with the information of the four so-called Muslim suicide bombers going in to Luton Station on the London bombing, which was on July the 7th, 2005. So, that, you know, there's a link there.
Yeah, it was, just, right. It was the same group of people that do all this stuff. You know, you try to tell people this, you know, like, it's hard for people to grasp, but almost everything, and it's just hugely demonic, just hugely evil. Usually you look into it, and it's like, okay, no, not again. It's like you just made the connection here to ICTS. It's like, it doesn't surprise me now, knowing what I know, but, you know, when you're telling the public about this stuff, and you're thinking, you know, how do you wrap your head around the fact that there's so much?
Right.
Well, I think with Daryl Bradford Smith, what he said is, and what I think is, because you can get very, you know, they use illusion and deception all the time. That's the only, you know, they are master magicians, but in the, you know, trickery sense. And I think what we have to do is just go to the truth and also realize that they're only people. And, you know, obviously, with all this brutality with respect to circumcision, that they're quite scared people. And, you know, we have to turn this thing round by, A, bringing out the truth, and B, you know, realizing that this isn't, you know, supernatural stuff or anything like that. It's just people being horrible to people. And the way I see it, it's like one tribe is trying to set up the world in their own tribal interest. And I think that, you know, I'm sorry, the world is a very big place, and there's lots of people. And to be so selfish is just not, you know, that's not a nice world. That's not, they don't even want to live in that world. I mean, that's a silly thing. You know, if they get their own way, they will hate what they've created. And I think at the end of the day, they've got to back down.
Right.
You made an excellent point there, too, is that we got to take our world back. You know, for all of humanity here to live peacefully with each other, You know, it turns out, you know, this one tribe that's involved in so much, and both of you guys make an excellent point here with the knowledge you got, is we need to start with the babies. Start from the infants, from the young.
Right.
Being able to protect them from day one, because like I said, you know, just these two issues alone of circumcision and the umbilical cord issue and the birthing in general, just the practice of pregnancy and childbirth in itself has been so flawed, and, you know, it's a huge fraud.
Right. Well, Mike, your website, prothink.org, is so good, and of course, seekingtruthnews.com, which a young man, 18-year-old, little young fellow, is so intelligent and knowledgeable. And of course, the guy that did the original research on 9/11 is erichaufschmidt.net.
Well, I'll leave you two with the final words, and what we'll do is we'll get this audio file out for everybody to listen to, like I said, at prothink.org. This is, normally I get into more political stuff, but I felt that, you know, hearing both of the stories you guys have been telling me here, that this kind of information needs to get out there too. It's very important, you know, for anybody that has a child, is going to have a child, know somebody that's going to have a child. This is excellent information that people need to be aware of. So if you go ahead, Mary, I'll let you get the final words first here. And if you have any websites that you would like people to look at or any books, go ahead and feel free to plug those here, and then we'll get to Leon here.
Okay, well, just to reiterate, World Wide Web Lotus Birth, L-O-T-U-S Birth, which is the site of Donna Young, to look at that one. Eileen Nicole Simon, placental respiration, that's another one to look at, and how the cord clamp injures your baby's brain. There was a website called cordclamping.com, George Malcolm Morley, M-O-R-L-E-Y, for people, you know, for further information on the subject I've been talking about, those websites have more information. And there was a journalist of the BBC called Matthew Hill that did a documentary that was aired on Radio 4, and I think it was December 2006, but it was The Great Stem Cell Swindle Part 2, and if anybody can get hold of that to listen to, because that's about babies being killed to order in Belarus and the stem cells going through the London stock market and ending up in a beauty clinic in Barbados was one of the things that was featured on that. Just, you know, to be more positive, in fact, the thing I'm talking about is so easy to correct. I want to see the cord left on the babies as a matter of course in the hospitals, not just the premature babies who are being resuscitated at the resuscitator, but I want to see all babies lying in their cots with 20 inches of cord attached to their belly button for the first hour of their life, and that when the cord is tidied, it is properly noted in the hospital notes. It's not something that is done without proper description.
Exactly.
Well, I completely agree with you, Mary, because, you know, the baby business is such a big business, so that, you know, doctors just don't have that kind of time to let the cord be so long, the placenta and the cord to be left there for so long. You know, they wouldn't make any money out of it, so you see it's all a farce. So that's really good that you're bringing this out. And as far as, I don't want to give the impression that baby girls are not intubated and clitoridectomies and that sort of female genital mutilation. That happens too. Muslim cultures in Ethiopia and Somalia, being that I'm so tied in, I've been 33 years, I've been an intactivist, and I want to, you know, say that let's not do this to our helpless infants. That's all. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you both of you being on the show today and sharing your wonderful information. Yeah, basically, I'll just wrap this up with saying, you know, from the information I've learned, especially from people like yourselves that have been able to teach so much, you know, I had this ideal that, well, basically everything we've been taught, it should be the opposite. You know, you probably agree with this. You know, starting off from pregnancy, you know, you want to stay organically healthy. You know, eat the right foods, and then have I would imagine a home birth versus a hospital birth, first of all, with a midwife setting. you know, having a natural birth, doing, you know, what you say with the umbilical cord, do not circumcise your child. And not only this, but, you know, beware of any vaccines out there. I would probably recommend against all of them. I haven't done the research to really see any positive ones out there at this point. And, you know, not only that, but homeschooling, too. You know, homeschooling is an excellent option to any public school systems out there that are still the education system. I mean, we have to make that a very clear point here. The medical industry, the education system, from kindergarten all the way up to PhD level, is being controlled by these people. So this is why they're breeding this false information all the way through the school system. So, you know, I'm a firm advocate on people homeschooling, too. But, you know, I appreciate you guys again being on the show.
That's great, Mike, and thank you.
All right.
Again, thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Leon.
Okay.
Hello?
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, thank
you. Later. Bye.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike, and I hope that I've put that clearly enough. Thank you very much.
All right, you guys have a wonderful day.
And okay, and have a good day yourself.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.